Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Dr. Hank, and welcome to this week's edition of the Dr. Hank Show. I'm your host, and you're my guest. And when I say you're my guest, today it's open mic. Open mic means that anyone from anywhere who has something that they'd like to share can feel free to call in, and we can talk about it. Well, ever so often we like to do open mic, or I like to do open mic because, well, from time to time, we have some of our listeners will say, you know, I want to talk more about that, or I want to hear more about that, or I had something that I wanted to say, and the conversation that was going on between you and your guests was so good, I didn't get a chance to, or I thought about it, or I listened to the show a week later, and a question came up, and, well, I didn't have access to you or the guests at that time, so I like to. So for various reasons, you know, there are people out there in listening land who have questions or comments or thoughts, and they want to, you know, present them. And, well, that's what I'm here for. And that's what we do, open mic. So if you're tuning in and you're wondering why we have open mic, well, that's the reason. The number to call is 929-477-1423. That's 929-477-1423. And don't be afraid, you know, your voice sounds perfect. You have a great radio voice, is what I like to tell people. And they go, well, you know, I like to be heard. There's going to be people listening to me. And I go, yeah, there'll be people listening to you, but there's no reason why you shouldn't want to share your thoughts and ideas. So, by all means, you know, feel free to call in and share those thoughts and ideas. And sooner or later, they go, well, okay, I'll do that. And they do. And, of course, I appreciate that. Because it takes courage. It takes courage to call in and share your thoughts. But, hey, that's why you tune to the show. To be able to either hear what we are talking about or to share your ideas with someone else. So feel free anytime to call in. This is the Dr. Hank Show, and today you are my guest. Now, just want to get started something. And really, from time to time, I'll hear people say, well, you know, I heard a lot about emotional intelligence, but I really don't know that much about emotional intelligence. So could you kind of talk a little bit about emotional intelligence itself? What is it, and why is it important, and those kinds of things? Well, that's what we're going to do today. I'm going to just kind of start off talking a little bit about EI. And you notice I said EI, and maybe that's one of the first things that we want to do is to talk a little bit about the differences between EI and EQ, or if there is a difference between EI and EQ. Often those two terms are used interchangeably. When someone says EQ, they probably mean EI, and when they say EI, they probably mean EQ. So for the general public, when we use the term EQ, we're talking about emotional intelligence. I know E is emotional, Q is quotient. So we should be saying emotional quotient, but we don't say emotional quotient. We say emotional intelligence. Now, on the other hand, we say EI, we would be saying emotional I intelligence. But again, as I said, we can just kind of take those two things and kind of wrap them up in a round ball. And when we use the term EQ, we're talking emotional intelligence, the same as when we're using EI. So we're not going to go into why one is this and why one is that. Suffice it to say, for most people, it means the same thing. Okay. So why is EQ or emotional intelligence important? Well, it's important for a lot of reasons, and I'm going to identify a few. But before I do that, let me just kind of give you a little short history on emotional intelligence itself. A lot of people think emotional intelligence is something that is, you know, fairly new, that maybe it's only been around, maybe 5 or 10 years. Actually, it's been around much, much longer than that. It wasn't always called EQ or emotional intelligence. It may have been referred to as emotional and social learning, or it may have been termed social learning or social intelligence. There's been a lot of different terms or names for this thing called emotional intelligence, and as it stands today, we're just kind of narrowing it down to mean a certain way of thinking about emotions and a certain way of thinking about intelligence. And we're trying to keep it narrow so that when we use the term emotional intelligence, pretty much everyone will know what we're talking about. Okay. Now, that's not the only kind of intelligence out there. Actually, there was that came up with what he called multiple intelligence. Multiple intelligence just simply means that there are a number of ways to look at intelligences, that not only do we have emotional intelligence, meaning our emotions, the intra and inter aspect of emotional intelligence. It also means that we may have kinesthetic intelligence, the ability to kind of think about and use our intelligence from a physical standpoint. You know, like there are weightlifters out there that, you know, like lift a lot of weight, that, you know, use their strength around intelligence. And so we call that a kinesthetic kind of intelligence. Or someone who is really good at painting, or someone who's really good at drawing items or objects. For instance, you know, you've seen this Mona Lisa where someone can do that sort of thing, sort of free form, without having an image in front of them. Well, they have spatial intelligence, it's called. Or someone who really has a great voice, you know, and they either sing or they present information in such a way that they capture the audience's attention just based on their voice. We say that that individual has linguistic intelligence. So the idea of multiple intelligence, again, is not a new phenomena out there. It's been around for a while. And you can look that one up. MI, multiple intelligences. Okay. Now, I did say that we want callers to call in and share their point of view or ask questions. So if we have anyone out there that is interested in sharing their thought, feel free to give us a call, 929-477-1423. That's 929-477-1423. Let me just check and see if there's anyone on the line. Is there anyone on the line? If so, just state your name and just pose your question. Okay, it sounds like we don't have anyone on at this point, so we'll go ahead with what I had planned today. And what I had planned was I was going to talk a little bit about the basic approach around emotional intelligence, one that most people see most of the time when they're thinking about emotional intelligence. They generally will see the four pillars of the four competencies around emotional intelligence. Now, you'll hear a number of different terms: four competencies, four pillars, the four steps, or four composites, or but we're talking the same thing. So for today, I'm going to use the term the four quadrants. Because if you think of a window, think of like a window pane, you know, you can divide the window pane into four quadrants. So just think of a big window, okay? Then you just draw a line through the center from top to bottom, and again through the center from left to right, and you have the four quadrants. Now, those four quadrants, we say our emotional intelligence is made up of those four quadrants. Those four quadrants being self-awareness and social awareness. That's quadrant one and two are the first or the top two quadrants. And then we can say self-management and relationship management being the lower two quadrants. So the top two quadrants is about self, or dealing with self as it relates to the awareness aspect of it, awareness of self, or the awareness of your social environment. Okay, in the bottom two quadrants, self-management, relationship management, is being able to have more control or manage what's going on with self, or to be able to manage or influence or work within what's going on in the social environment. Okay, so again, we don't have to think of a lot of ways to look at this. You just think in terms of these four quadrants: self-awareness, social awareness, self-management, and relationship management. Now, Daniel Goleman, who's one of the, we would call him one of the fathers of emotional intelligence, has really been credited with coming up with this model. And for those of you that are interested, you can go out and Google Daniel Goleman. You'll come across a lot of the work that he's done. And actually, his work now expands on all of these. So this isn't necessarily his most recent work. It's just simply some of the work that he has done. And so as he put this approach forward, then a lot of us, meaning a lot of us in the field of emotional intelligence, say, what kinds of things can fit into these quadrants? For instance, what can fit into the self-awareness quadrant? Well, we can say our emotional self-awareness, being aware of our emotions, fits into that quadrant. Being able to accurately assess our emotions or understand what's going on with us and our emotion can fit into that quadrant. Our confidence in who we are and our ability to do things certainly could fit into that quadrant, because again, we're focusing on, in that quadrant, we're focusing on self. over on the social awareness side, some of the things that can fit into that quadrant. Empathy could be one of those things that could fit into that quadrant. So when we're talking social awareness, we're actually looking at things outside of us, whether we're looking at our job or another job or the neighbor next door or a kind of work someone does. That indeed is being aware of what's going on in our social environment. And believe it or not, we have emotions that relate to that social environment. Okay? We're going to come back to that one because today we're going to focus on empathy. So if you're listening and want to know which area that we're going to focus on, it's going to be empathy. So we're going to come back to that. I just want to move ahead with a little bit more information about the quadrants. So now this third quadrant, the self-management quadrant, what could go into that? Well, thinking about self-management, there's a lot of things that could fall into that quadrant. For instance, you know, our self-control, our ability to control or manage or deal with things that are happening with us. Our impulse control, as an example, might be something that would fit into that quadrant. Our adaptability, our ability to be able to adapt to various situations or to adapt to things as they occur or to adapt to a situation in which you may have one feeling about, but that feeling or that emotion may not be appropriate for that situation. So we may have to shift in terms of how we now see that. So adaptability, initiative could fall into that self-management area as well, because when we're talking self-management and then we talk initiative, we're saying something like drive or the need to or the want to accomplish something. So self-management, initiative, self-control, impulse control, those are good things that can fit in there. And we can talk more about those at another time also. And lastly, the relationship management quadrant. And what might fit into the relationship management quadrant? Well, let's see. If you're thinking about relationships, you're thinking about relationships that you might have with a friend, a relative, a coworker, your significant other, a partner. So conflict management might be something that would fit into relationship management. So certainly, you know, if you have relationships, there's an opportunity, there's going to be an opportunity for conflict to occur in there. Building relationships or building bonds with that relationship is also an important piece that can fit into that relationship management. And I mentioned work earlier. Well, in a work environment, typically you're going to have people who are in leadership positions. So that person that's in a leadership position or role will have, as a part of his or her responsibility, the role of leading or inspiring others. Okay? In other words, as a leader, you're not a leader because people don't follow you. You are a leader because people do follow you. And so when the question is, why do they follow you? Well, they can follow you because of, well, you're hoping, ideally, you want them to follow you because they are inspired by you. Not that you're a charismatic leader. While that's a good leadership quality to have, perhaps it's because you are an inspirational leader. People look at you, they see you, they want to, quote, be like you. In other words, they want to accomplish things the way that you do. They want to have that same drive and motivation that you exhibit. So inspirational leadership could be something that could fit into that quadrant. Also, change. People often see and wonder, you know, who's going to, quote, drive the change, or is things going to remain pretty much the same? And so therefore, to have good relationship management skills, you probably will need to be someone who is considered a pretty good change agent, someone who knows how to get people inspired and moving forward or towards whatever the new way of doing things is. Teamwork and collaboration is something that could fall under relationship management. So there's a number of things that we could easily put under relationship management, or as we are talking, we can see that you can actually, these probably can all fall onto one area, and that's emotional intelligence. But it's important to be able to kind of segment out where these things fall. And the reason is because if we're looking at improving our skills, and emotional intelligence is a skill, it's not just, you know, something that people talk about, although they do talk about it a lot, it's something that you can work on and become better at. So it's a skill, and it is ability. So some people have good skills in emotional intelligence. Some people have average skill. Some have moderate skill. Some have really, really high skills in emotional intelligence. And when I use the term skill, we're going to be looking at how one has those skills. Okay? So let's see if I can find some examples here to illustrate some of these skills, so that some of these skills will easily show up, or you can easily, well, you can easily put your finger on these skills, as the saying goes. Okay. Okay. I had mentioned that one of the areas that we were going to focus on was empathy. Now, that's a great skill to have. It's a great skill to have, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that skill and why it's such a great skill to have. Okay. So, just to recap, we said those four quadrants, particular model, self-awareness, social awareness, self-management, and relationship management. We also talked about some things that can fall under each one of those areas. So, for instance, under self-awareness, we could easily put emotional self-awareness there, or we could easily put self-confidence or self-awareness, as some people refer to it, in that quadrant. When it comes to self-management, we could easily put, you know, things like impulse control or being flexible and adaptable. And under relationship management, we could easily put things like inspirational leadership. We could put things like conflict management or teamwork and collaboration. All of those go under the relationship management. So that brings us to the social awareness quadrant. And on the social awareness quadrant, the one that I wanted to focus on today in the time that we have left is empathy. Now, often when people hear the term empathy, they say, well, empathy just means being able to walk in someone else's shoes, to know what someone else is feeling, to know what they're thinking. Okay, I got that. So what? Well, it goes further than that, because what we're talking about is the skill of empathy. Can you demonstrate empathy? Can you be empathic when it's necessary to be empathic? Can you be empathic for your own self-development and growth? Yeah. Being empathic means being able to recognize, understand where someone else is, quote, coming from, or their expression on something, or their need to have something or do something, or what causes them to act the way that they act, or what causes them to be the way that they are. And that's important, because if you want to have, you know, good relationship management or good relationship skills with people, whether it's self or whether it's, you know, a coworker or spouse or anyone, having good empathy skills, being able to empathize, is really, really important. Now, so how does one become more empathic, or how does one develop their empathy skills? Well, first of all, as the old saying goes, it ain't easy. Now, having said that, yes, it is. It's easy, it's enjoyable, it can be fun. You just have to select the one that you think works best for you. So we're going to go through a few and maybe even look at some examples on how you might do some of these things, okay? So, if I'm looking at improving my empathy, one of the first things I need to probably know or recognize or understand is, what's in it for me? The old W-I-I-F-M. W-I-I-F-M. If you're not familiar with WIIFM and you think it's a radio station, thinking it's an FM radio station, no, it's not. IIFM is what's in it for me. WIIFM, what's in it for me? Now, I know this might be a sound like a selfish approach, but really, if we want to improve on something, we do have to answer that question, what's in it for me? What do I get out of it? And that's not selfish in that sense, because when you say what's in it for me, you could be talking about what's in it for me and my family, what's in it for me and my son, my daughter, what's in it for me and my company, or what's in it for me and my coworkers. What's in it for me and my neighbors? So I just don't mean what's in it for me on a personal basis, although that's a big part of it. The what's in it for me is, where are there benefits? What is something that can be gained from knowing this or doing this or understanding this? Okay. So I don't want to come across with this from a selfish sounding standpoint where I'm saying it's only what's in it for me personally. It can be what's in it for me on a much larger scale. I think of it not on just the micro scale, but on the macro scale as well. So here are some ways, maybe three or four, and we'll talk about these three or four ways. One, get out of your usual environment. Get out of your usual environment. Travel, especially to new places and cultures, It gives you a better appreciation of others. Now, when I say travel, you don't have to travel to another country, although that's great. You know, hey, I have on my bucket list some really places, like, for instance, I want to go to Mexico because I want to go and visit the pyramids down in Mexico. So, however, I'm not going today or tomorrow or anytime soon, so I put it on my bucket list, as we call it. So you can travel to another part of your city. You can travel to another part of your state. And gosh, we have lots of places within the United States to travel to where people do things just a little bit different, let's say, from the way that you do them or from the way that they're being done, let's say, in your community. Okay? So traveling gives you a different perspective on how things are done somewhere else. So when you hear about something happens in one city or something happened in one state and you don't have a good reference point, probably because you're not as familiar with what goes on in that city, state, or community. So if you can just travel to that area, and maybe if you can't travel physically, you can travel, you know, via the internet. However, it would be my recommendation to travel physically to that area. Now, I lived in Los Angeles for a long period of time, okay? And when I lived in Los Angeles, you know, large area, large city, okay? But there were places within that city that, you know, I generally did not go. Not because I wasn't welcome there or not because I didn't dare go there. It was just not a part of my regular routine travel, okay? And so what comes to mind when I say that, and I'm using this term only because people probably have heard of the city of Compton, California, and they probably have heard how bad it is and, you know, how rough it is and, you know. However, until you go there, you don't necessarily have any appreciation for the community. Well, having been from California or being a native of California, I've gone there, went to Compton many times, and you know what I found? It's a community much like any other community. People live in houses. They have stores, they have schools, people just go about doing their 8-to-5 and 9-to-5 job just like they do in any other community. What stands out is, you know, the lifestyle. In other words, what people talk about, you know, where people go. And, you know, you find that there was very little difference in what they did. But their discussions were different than the discussions that I had because I lived in L.A. So naturally, we talk about what's going on within our community in L.A. And the folks that lived in Compton, what did they talk about? What went on in their community, okay? But it gave me an appreciation for the individuals that lived there because now I could hear and I could understand what some of their concerns were. No, yeah, and some of the things that they kind of didn't like was the way that the media often portrayed, you know, the city of Compton. But that's a whole nother story, and I won't go into that one, okay? But, yeah, travel. Get out of your usual environment and travel to some new places, maybe see some new cultures, integrate yourself with new cultures, you know. And we're talking about in a traditional work environment, most of us take the same route home almost every day to and from work. Try a different route or route, whatever your pronunciation is of that word, route or route, but travel a different route. Get an appreciation for what goes on in some of the neighborhoods that you don't usually see. And now with freeways all over the place, or what's another term? Toll roads all over the place. It often takes us around communities so that we don't actually drive through the communities the way that we may have done at once. So we often bypass the community. We drive right past a community and not know what some of the issues are. So I'm suggesting maybe slowing down, take an alternate path, drive into the community, meet some people, talk to some people, go shopping in the stores in that community, hear what people are talking about. It gives you a different appreciation. It helps you to be a little bit more empathic about the individuals in that community. Okay. We're talking about walking in other shoes. That's a great way to walk in their shoes, because you can hear what some of the issues are, get an idea of some of their concerns, as well as some of the things that they experience there. So you have to put yourself there, you know, to some extent. And I'm not saying go from A all the way to Z in terms of that exposure. Maybe you go from a community like A to a community like C. Okay? Because, again, you have to keep in mind you're coming out of your comfort zone, so you can't come so far out of your comfort zone until you're shutting yourself down from the experience. You need to be able to recognize the experience that you have, okay? Okay, what's another way? Here's a great one. Examine your biases. We all have hidden biases, and sometimes not so hidden. And they often interfere with our ability to listen and to empathize. These are often centered around visible factors such as age, or race, or gender. Now, some people don't think they have biases. Well, I say to you again, we all have biases. As I always like to say, some of us like spicy foods, some of us don't. If you don't like spicy foods, then you have a bias around spicy foods. If you do like spicy foods, you have a bias around spicy foods. So whether you like it or not like it, there's a bias out there. Okay? But let's look at some of the biases that we probably typically run into. Well, one is age bias. Age bias. Now, this isn't aimed at any age group, so don't call in and say, Dr. Hank, you were putting down the elderly, you were putting down the new gen, or you were putting down the Y gen. No. Let me be clear. I'm not putting down or throwing stones at any generation. I'm saying if you're not of that generation, you will generally have some biases around or about the other generation. You know, we're always talking about generational issues in the workplace, right? So one of the things that we say is that we have at least four generations in the workplace, you know, whether they're matures or the boomers, regardless of what generations they are, and I'm not going to name them because, you know, they keep changing as they should. But let's say there are four generations in the workplace. If you're a part of one of those generations, that means that those other three generations are somewhat foreign to you. And when I say foreign, meaning that you can only be close to, let's say, the generation that is closest to you. So the generation that's the furthest away is the generation that you probably have most issues with. And when I say issues, I'm just talking about not necessarily understanding or not seeing their points of views or not being on the same page as the folks that are in that generation. Okay. So what can we do about that? Well, we'll use the workplace, because the workplace is one place where we know that we can probably come across different generations. Now, we can also come across different generations in our family, okay? Because most of the time, our families consist of about three generations, three different generations, whereas we have the grandmother, grandfather, and the mother, father, and then we have you. Now, we're not talking about whether you have kids or not and things like that, but we're saying that you probably will have access to at least two generations. And if you're lucky, you can have access to three generations, the grand generation, the mother-father generation, and your child's generation. That is if you're probably in your 30s, you know. Okay. So, generations. So, what can we do about that? Well, one, we can put ourselves where those different generations exist. We can talk to them. We can talk to them. Okay. Let's say that you're in a generation that's two levels away, regardless of what generation it is. You're two levels away. It may make sense for you to put yourself sometimes or in some way or another where those generations are, so you can find out what some of their concerns might be. Talk to them. Ask them, you know, what are some of the issues that they're experiencing? What are some of the things that they care about? What are some of the things that they worry about? What keeps them up at night, you know? So what you're doing is you're getting into that other generation. You can ask them questions like, what is it that they don't recognize or understand about your generation, the generation that you're currently a part of? Because what that does is that gives you information about yourself that you didn't know about, okay? There's this model of awareness out there. It's called the Johari window. Johari window. Now, some of you probably have heard of it, may have seen it, talked about it, may have used it in your organization. But just like I was talking about these four quadrants around emotional intelligence, many years ago, a couple of researchers out at UCLA, Joseph Luft and Harry Ingham, came up with this concept of the Johari, Joseph, and Hari, Harry. So it's Johari window, okay? J-O-H-A-R-I. Yeah, that's how it's spelled. Johari window. And essentially what they said is these four quadrants, just like we mentioned about the EI model or the EQ model. In the first quadrant, they just said that was called the open. And that was the part of us, the part of you. But for the sake of discussion, we're going to say my Johari window. I have these four panes, four quadrants. The first one being the open. That would be where there would be things that I know about me, and there would be those same things that you would know about me. So we would call that open, because I know of these things about me and you know these things about me. So that part of my self, that part of my window is open. Okay. Then there was another part of my window that they call the hidden, H-I-D-D-E-N. And what was really interesting about that part of my window, or that part of me, was the fact that that part of me were things that I knew about me, but you didn't know about me. Okay? Things that I knew about me and you didn't know about me. I was keeping that part of me hidden. It's interesting, right? There was another part of my window that was simply called the unknown. Now, the unknown was that part of me that I didn't know about, whatever that is. Also, it's that part of me that you didn't know about either. So there's some part of everything, some part of you, some part of me, some part of your house, some part of your car, some part of life in general that no one knows anything about it. Means it doesn't mean that you're keeping it hidden on purpose. It doesn't mean that somebody else is hiding it from you. It's just simply unknown. Okay? And then the fourth part of the window was, you know, part of the window they call the closed. And it was only called that because there were things that I didn't know about me, but you did know about me. And the interesting thing is, when we talk about that part of the window, you know, it becomes a little hilarious because I don't know it about me, but you do. Now, the interesting thing is, how does one know things about you that you don't know? Well, a good example, let's say I went out and I bought this brand new shirt. I went to Kohl's and I saw this great shirt and I said, I like this shirt. I want this shirt. And I said, I'm going to buy this shirt. So I went out and I bought this shirt from Kohl's, put it on, and man, I was looking good in this shirt. So I was just walking along, whistling, okay? And then I saw a couple of people over there just kind of whispering to each other. And I was wondering, you know, what's going on? Why are they over there whispering to each other? Okay. So when I walk over, they stop whispering naturally. Later, I discover that I had not taken some of the tags off of my shirt. So there was that part of me that I didn't know, but they did. I didn't know it, but they did. And the way that they dealt with that is they kept that from me. They probably didn't do it on purpose. It was just that it existed because that was that part of me that I didn't know, but they did. And the way to sort of clear up a lot of that window, to make that window much, much clearer for everyone, is from the open standpoint, if I could be a little more transparent about things, okay, that would make my open larger. Now, remember, I said when it comes to self-management, one of the big pieces around self-management was transparency. So for people to know more about me, I just need to be more open. I need to share more. Now, there's always some concerns about sharing, and that is, you know, you might share too much and people will take advantage of it. But don't worry about that. Just know that to make my open larger, I can reduce my hidden by sharing more with people, okay? And then the other window where people weren't sharing with me, they would only have told me that I had those tags on my shirt, I would have been in a better position, okay? I would have felt better. So I could have made that part of my window a little bit larger also by getting feedback from individuals, okay? So when we're talking about social awareness and empathy, and that's where I was going with this. So when we talk about social awareness and empathy, in order to be more empathic, I have to be willing to put myself into environments where I can find out more information, or people are willing to share more information with me. So I have to make my Johari window larger. I have to explore, and I have to be willing to listen. Okay? So, a couple of ways just to kind of recap some of the things I've talked about is that if empathy is important, and if empathy is something that I want to work on, then there are a couple of things that I can put into place. There are a couple of things that I can be doing. One, I can get out and explore my environment just a little bit more. I can take some different paths. I can go visit other cities, other states, other countries, so that I can develop an appreciation for what goes on there. So I can be more empathic about what's going on outside of my little comfort zone. Okay. It allows me to walk in the shoes of another. Okay. Another way that I mentioned was to examine my biases. Oh, yeah, I have biases, just like everyone else does, just like you do. And if you say you don't have a bias, well, I don't like to tell people they're not telling the truth. Well, in this case, you're not telling the truth. You do have bias. We may not know what it is. You may not know what it is, but it is a bias. One of the biases that we were talking about was just age. Okay? Age is a big bias that people have. Some don't want to work with the older adults. Some don't want to work with younger adults. Okay? Because the younger adults, you know, they are still wet behind the ears. They don't know anything. And the older adults, they're all set in their ways and they're not open to change. Oh, we can come up with any number of reasons around age and age biases, okay? We also have race bias. We're not going to spend a lot of time on race bias because we know that that exists and we know what it looks like. We know what it sounds like. And we, to the extent possible, I think we do all that we can to not demonstrate race bias, even though we have it, okay? And then there's gender bias. Yeah, gender bias. We can have biases with or around our own gender, or gender that's not like us, or new genders that seem to be coming up, okay? So, yeah, gender biases, okay? So, when we talk about improving empathy, we actually do need to sort of get out there. We need to get out there and expose ourselves to things that we ordinarily would not. That way it opens our head, it opens our minds to new experiences. And last one around empathy that I want to share is maybe just asking better questions. You know, if you could bring two or three questions, you know, so that when you get involved in a conversation with your friends or coworkers or clients or colleagues, you know, you can pose those questions. Now, the questions do need to be relative. They do need to be related in some way. But what we're talking about is so that when you pose the question, what you're doing is you're expanding your knowledge about what's going on there. Okay. So here's an example. Just think, you know, and if you happen to be listening because you're at work, you can do this almost right away. Okay. So think in terms of we often will talk to our clients, or we often will talk to someone that's in a business that's different from ours. Maybe you're a vendor, maybe you're a supplier, okay? Let's say in that vendor-supplier relationship, what do you know about this company, okay? What do you know about the individual that you are working with, okay? Let's say that you're a vendor or a supplier. So maybe you can ask questions to that individual, you know, like, what are some of the issues that you face at work on a day-to-day basis? So by asking that question, you're getting to know a little bit more about the individual. You're getting to know a little bit more about some of the things that they deal with, some of the issues that they deal with, some of the things that they go through, so that when they respond certain ways on the phone, you may be able to empathize with where they are and what is causing them to be that way. Okay? You might ask, what are some of the problems that, you know, arises in the work that you do? What are some of the things that causes you to get upset, you know? All you're trying to do is, one, is to find out a little bit more about what goes on with that individual so that you can be better prepared to interact with the individual on a day-to-day basis, so that when he or she is calling in or vice versa and they sound like they have a short fuse, well, if you have some insight as to the kinds of issues or problems that they may face or deal with, it might explain why they have a short fuse today. Okay, if you can empathize with some of the problems that this organization is going through, maybe it's a merger, maybe it's an acquisition, maybe this individual is, you know, about ready to be rotated out, or about ready to wind up in a different department. We don't know. But if we don't sort of show an interest, then we're not going to be in a position to work effectively with the individual. So all we're really talking about is ways that we can improve our empathy. And none of these that I mentioned, at least I don't believe they are, none of the ones that I mentioned are, you know, cause you to need to have a degree in rocket science to be able to do them. These are things that we do on a day-to-day basis, so putting them into play should be relatively easy or relatively simple to do. So when we talk about social awareness today, I just wanted to select one little piece out of social awareness, and it was empathy, and talk about how we can improve our empathic skill. And remember, I said emotional intelligence is a skill. It's not just a term, it's a practice. It's something that we do, not just say. Emotional intelligence is what we do, not just what we say. And think of it in terms of it being a practice, not just a term. So this is Dr. Hank. Hey, I've had a great time today talking about my favorite topic, emotional intelligence. I'd like for you to be back next week so we can have some more discussion. But I don't want to just talk about it. I want you to call in and share your thoughts and ask your questions and get your information, get your input on it. So feel free to do that. The number to call again is 929-477-1423. So I'll be back next week, same place, same time. Hope you will too. This is Dr. Hank. So please, everyone, go out and have an EI day. And I look forward to talking with you or seeing with you in the near future. Thanks, everyone. Please have an EI day. Bye now.